God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. And I'm going to stop the share here real quick and make it so that people can see you. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone who can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. If you're a newcomer, you can either wave at your screen or hit the little blue hand in the participants tab and we'll acknowledge you and give you a chance to introduce yourself. Anyone. No one. Evan?
Yes. I'm Evan. I'm actually 3 weeks sober today. I got a sponsor, got a home group, and I'm taking this stuff seriously. So glad to be here.
Outstanding. Anyone else? All right. Well, welcome anyone else who's shy. Our preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel for this evening, Melissa and Steve. All right. I will read the first paragraph. Hold on, let me flip this over real quick. On page 84, and I'm going to share that for you, if my computer will let me. There we go. We'll start with step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Page 84, this thought brings us to step 10. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. We'll start with Melissa.
Hey, everybody. My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me tonight. It's good to be here with all of you guys. Just a little background info to get out of the way. My sobriety date is September 8th, 2014. I do have a sponsor. She is very well aware that she sponsors me. I sponsor other people in this program and take them through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is what has gotten and kept me sober for this period of time. And I'm incredibly grateful for that. I have a home group, Westside Young and Sober. We meet on Tuesday nights, so tomorrow night. If you're finding yourself around 7:30 and need a meeting, come check us out. We're also on Zoom. This step 10. So there's 9 steps before this. If you're new, I know we have at least one newcomer in here. You might be thinking, continue to take personal inventory. What is that? Well, in step 4, you take an initial inventory. And if you're like me, I thought that I was pretty much done with that after step 4. I've cleaned the slate. I am now rendered white as snow, and I can go on my merry way for the rest of my life and never have to do this again. To say that I was still delusional was an understatement when it came to me and all of this stuff. I am the type of person that when I did my 4th step, I could knock the first 3 columns out pretty quickly. It was that 4th column where I have to find what my part is in things that I really struggled with. Partly some of it I was confused, and a lot of it was I just didn't really see where I had a part in things. I was still very absorbed in self and playing the victim, so to speak, when it came to a lot of things in my life that I was resentful about. So, you know, for me to get to this point, I've made some of my amends, not all of my amends. But, you know, we keep plugging forward. We don't want to sit on our laurels for too long, or we can get into some trouble. But I get to this step and I'm like, I just did a 4th step like a month ago. What do you mean? I'm going to do wrong things again. I've been given this, reprieve and taught how to live this spiritual life. And I'm never going to make a mistake or make anybody mad, or no, I'm not going to get mad at anybody. Like, I'm floating on this spiritual mountaintop. Reality is I do this every day. Some days not so much right now, because we've been living in quarantine essentially for 9 months, but there is some way, shape, or form that I either piss someone off or someone pisses me off on a daily basis. And that is part of being a human being. The difference today, how I react to it. A lot of it has to do with, for me, I'm very stubborn and I don't like making amends. I don't like having to admit when I'm wrong and when I make mistakes. So I find myself pausing, before I speak a lot more today, which is a very, excellent thing this program has taught me to do, pause when agitated. Because I don't like having to do this. That is my pride and my ego, 100% not wanting to have to admit that I am an imperfect person. That being said, it's a lot easier for me today to do that. I actually enjoy not being right all the time. I never thought I would ever say those words, but I do. It's a very freeing feeling to not have that held over my head all day long. That's a really, that took up a lot of space in my head, that idea of perfectionism and that I have to know everything and I have to do everything right all the time. That is a completely unrealistic ideal for anyone to live up to. But it was one that I had for myself and that I can still slip back into from time to time. You know, and it talks about in this paragraph, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's what I've done. I've grown in that understanding of myself, that is part of my makeup. That is one of my character defects. I can't do anything about it. All I can do is turn that over to my higher power, to God, and have him work on that. Most days I'm willing to do that. Some days I'm not willing to do that. You know, and I'm continuing to watch for these things as they crop up. It's easier for me to do that when I'm around people all the time. I will tell you that. One of the blessings of this program and of this life is I have learned who to surround myself with. I surround myself with people today that tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. Early on, you know, I hooked up with people in the program that told me what I needed to hear to save my life, not what I wanted to hear to pander to my ego. And that, you know, was very hard to take at times, but it was absolutely critical for me to learn and to grow and to stay here. people were more concerned with helping me save my life than they were helping me save face, which is an amazing thing. I've never in my life experienced a group of people who are virtual strangers that are willing to do that for each other. It's a pretty incredible thing that we have here. You know, and so when these things crop up, I have those people to turn to. Today, I turn a lot more quickly than I used to. I would sit on things sometimes for 3 and 4 weeks, and it would just eat away at my insides, and I'd lose sleep over it, and it would, you know, conscious and subconsciously, like I just knew I had done something ick, and I'm sitting on it. My pride and ego is like, no, just think about it a little bit longer. Maybe it's not as bad as you think it was. You tend to exaggerate and blow things up. Maybe it really wasn't that bad. And I can sit in that for a really, really, really long time and think it over. And then finally it's like, just say something. And literally as soon as I say something to someone else and they're like, oh yeah, it's really not that bad. Or, oh yeah, you probably do owe an amends for that. It's gone. Like, it doesn't hold that weight. It doesn't hold that power over me anymore. And that's one of the things that I've learned is this ick that I keep inside of me all the time. All that does is weigh me down and keeps me from being useful. This program has given me a purpose today for my life. Like, I've never felt that I've lived a purposeful life until I came in here and I got sober and realize that I do affect other people around me. And I can do that negatively or I can do that positively. And today I choose to do that in a more positive light. And the only way that I can do that is with help. I cannot do this on my own, whether it's from, you know, the help of you guys around me or just help daily from my higher power when I'm asking, you know, through prayer and meditation to help me get through things. You know, and the very last sentence of this paragraph is one of my favorite lines in the book: love and tolerance of others is our code. That's been a very difficult statement for me this year. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in the world. I'm not going to get into it because it's a lot of outside issues and we're here to talk about alcoholism, but I'd be lying to say that those things don't affect me and they don't affect my behavior and the way that I deal with things. And time and time and time again this year, when I found myself in a keyboard warrior, Facebook, social media battle with perfect strangers where I'm blocking and they're blocking me from left and right. It happens. I'm human. This line will pop into my mind: love and tolerance of others is our code. Their behavior is none of my business. My behavior is my business. The way that I behave, the way that I treat other people is a direct reflection of me and me alone. And this line, this simple few words reminds me constantly, like, this is what I am today. This is what I'm showing to the rest of the world. These people don't know me. I don't know them. Or it may be I'm in an argument with someone I do know. My job is just to be loving and tolerant. Doesn't mean I have to sit in that conversation even longer. Doesn't mean I have to stay. Just means love and tolerance is our code. Be kind to them, excuse myself and go on. When I engage is when I have to do all this other stuff in here that I don't want to do, because now I have to make an amends for my behavior. It doesn't matter what they did. It matters what I did. That's all of this is about. No one else but me. It doesn't matter what someone else does to me. If I react wrongly, I have to keep my side of the street clean. Doesn't matter what they do, you know, that's not going to affect my sobriety. My sobriety is going to be affected by what I do. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
All right, thanks. Steve, I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date is April 18th, 2014. My home group is the Common Solution Group. We're meeting right now on Zoom in about 15 minutes. We usually meet in Princeton, New Jersey on Monday nights, and we are a big book study as well. And thanks for having me. It's really, really cool to be here. Step 10, after we get done through the first 9 steps, we basically, this is my walking around spot check inventory throughout the day. And I came into this step kind of slowly. I was a little bit shot out when I got sober, had a bit of a rough run. I got sober back in the mid 90s and then relapsed after 12 years. I had never done any of this stuff. And when I started going through the book with someone who's actually been through the book and had this experience, I finally got three steps, 1 through 9. I get to step 10 and I was like, you mean I got to keep doing this? I was like, you got to be kidding me. And it says, it's not as bad as it sounds if you're new. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes we go along. So we're talking about steps 4 through 9 here continually. Now, step 10 is different from my fourth step in that I'm looking at me now, not them. I now look for internal things, not external things, and I'm not looking with my eyes. I'm looking through these tools, through this experience of what I've had, what I realized from how I first learned to do inventory. And it's kind of like a spot check inventory throughout the day. And I'll kind of explain what I mean later. And our next function is to grow an understanding and effectiveness. Now, this is basically a page 77 reference where it says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, to get better at it as we continue. It's for our lifetime. So I have to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it's basically where I learned to do that was in my fourth step. This is what I realized in my third and fourth columns of what my old ideas and belief systems are. I got to see the expectations or the scripts that I was operating by subconsciously, that when you didn't do what I wanted to do, I'd get pissed off and then my character defects would start to flare up. And now I have to watch for these things, not like I'm sitting at an intersection and just standing there waiting. It's kind of like as I'm going through the intersection, I'm just kind of casually watching, because in step 4, that's where I know what to watch for in step 10. Okay, because these things are going to come up. It says it's not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for a lifetime. We have to watch for selfishness, dishonesty. My dishonesty can come in all different types of form, delusion, half-truths or lies of omissions or just flat-out lies. I'm pretty familiar with those. Resentments, whenever I get angry, those are the things that I have to have that pause button for immediately. And of course, fear is the firing pin for all my character defects. So when these crop up, here's our specific clear-cut directions for step 10. We've got watch, we've got now, we're going to ask God at once to remove them, right? Which is 6 and 7. And then we're going to discuss them with someone immediately, which is 5, and make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody, which is 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, which is a step 12 reference. And love and tolerance of others is our code. I am here to learn how to think of others. I spent my entire life thinking about myself. And I didn't come in here to become more of a narcissist. I came in here to literally to not think as much of myself and actually start to think of others. So one of the things that I do is I had to go about this really slow because I couldn't remember how to do any of this. And I started to realize working with sponsees that they didn't either. So what I started doing was in my lineage, they sometimes work with 3x5 cards. And I started to put some of the directions. So I got watch, ask, turn, just kind of like some work, discuss and amends. And those are the words. And I'd start with like 1 for a week and I just watch. And I remember the things I was watching for, the things that I realized in my resentment inventory and how I tend to show up at work and in my relationship and as a father. And those things tend to get me in trouble. And as I started to get better at watching, I started to get better at pausing. And then when I had that pause, I go, God, please remove this thought or feeling or whatever. And then I had to, and if it stayed on me, I'd have to call somebody. I got a group of guys that I do evening review emails with, that I either pick up the phone with and I'm like, hey, I got an immediately. You got a minute. Now, usually what I like to do if something like this is going on and it's really got me upset, I try to find some time to scratch out a quick piece of 4-column inventory before I call somebody. And I've done this enough now, especially in this pandemic, because I do not pandemic well. I'm an outdoor cat. I like to go out and do my own thing, and I don't like being told that I can't go somewhere or do something. Not alcoholic mind at all. And I, what I have to do is I'll call my sponsor, and he'll just, you know, got to the point early on where if I didn't have the inventory written, he'd hang up. He'd say, call me back when it's done. And so by the time I'd get to the third column, I'd start to see, I'd be like, oh man, this is me again. This is me. This is that same bad penny showing up again, you know, in another way. And what the crazy thing about it is I keep falling for it every time. It just shows up in a new dress or a new thing. And it's just the same egoic, you know, I'm not getting my way type of thing. And I have to, by the time I get to that third column, I already see now how I'm starting to keep that ball, to start that ball rolling. And then the fourth column is a little bit easier to see. I had to have that pointed out to me early on. I could only see it from what you did to me and how it was affecting me. And now that I've had enough self pulled off me through this process, that I'm starting to catch it before I get to the end of it. And it doesn't require a 10 step call. I can get free of it, but it takes practice, like a daily practice thing. And that's what they were talking about. I thought it was like, you know, my initial opinion about this thing before I had the experience was, I'm going to have to keep doing these knock down, drag out inventories and then sit down with a sponsor and go through that whole first time. No, that's just where I learned how to write this stuff. And I learned how to spot this stuff. And I learned some context of what having an alcoholic mind is, how I show up in my daily life. Because after all, it's my mind is where the problem really is. And I have to get better at spotting it. It is really hard to spot your mind with your mind. Really difficult to do that. So that's why I need a team of people, right? And that's when I started to realize that there were different versions of self. There was the egoic intellectual self. There was the spiritual self. There was the heart self, the gut self. And like, by God, I started to feel like I had multiple personalities, but I could actually start to observe my thinking. And then I'd be like, oh my God, who's doing the thinking? Like if I'm sitting there going, wow, that was a crazy thought. Like who just said that? And I was like, oh my God, I'm not my thinking mind. My thinking mind does, you know, add, subtract, you know, facts, memory recall. It's a great tool, but a horrible master. And I'd been living as though it was my master. And I started to realize how I could differentiate through this process as I practiced it. So one of the things that I do to help the newer guys, I'm just like, look, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just start. And you know, a lot of times I walk around through the day and I don't know I'm being driven. I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I'm doing the best I can. I do my own awakening in the morning and I have absolutely no idea I'm being driven until I step on your toes and I'm in damage control mode. And I wake up and I go, oh damn, I did it again. And then I got to go down through this process again. And I'm hoping that as I continue to, and I continue to do this, I get better at it. So that even though if I wake up and sometimes I'm driven or I fall asleep, which happens quite a bit, I don't end up creating harm. I end up pausing. I end up walking the dog backwards a little bit, finding out how I set the ball rolling. And if anybody, let me just show you guys this thing here. This is what I started out with. How I start out in the day, the On Awakening prayer. It tells us what to do. It gives us some prayers to do throughout the day, which we'll kind of get into. But this is kind of my, you know, watch, ask, turn, make amends, and, you know, turn our thoughts to someone we can help thing. And this is just basically what I do when I leave the house. And over time, I start to get better at living it. Then I don't have to reference the sheet anymore. Now it's become a part of my routine and my habit. And these principles have become a part of my daily life. And it, you know, I used to sit there and whine and snivel about, oh my God, this is going to be some like monk-like existence and this is going to be horrible. And once I started doing it, I started to want to do it because of the effect produced by it. And I started to feel good. And then when I didn't do it, I started to really notice when I'm not doing it. So it's like, I'm going to pay a price no matter what. I'm going to pay a price for doing it and the time and the effort that it takes to do these disciplines. Or I'm going to pay a price for not doing them. And through too much experience, I've realized that the price for not doing it is far too high. to write 5 minutes of inventory, to have a, 10 to 20 minute prayer and meditation practice with a two-way prayer practice takes me 25 minutes every morning. I absolutely love it and start my day with it. I'll kick it back to you, Melissa, if you want to take the next paragraph.
Thank you, guys. That was a great way of starting. Let me pop this screen share back up. All right, I'm still on page 84. We didn't go real far. Let's see here. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Thanks, Grant. So this paragraph, when it talks about the sanity portion, it took me a really long time to realize this is talking about step two and the sanity that they're talking about. Step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's not talking about, my insane shopping habits or, chasing after whatever. It's talking about the insanity of my obsession of the mind over the drink. That is what step two has done for me, or is in process, and this is the result. I get to this step and I've came to believe that God could do that, and I've accepted that God could do that, and so now I'm letting God do that by this point. And I love this paragraph. I used to think, oh, it's talking about I can go to a bar now and be cool. I can go listen to a live show and hang out with people and shoot pool, and I'm not going to be sitting there with the wheels turning over and over and over about how can I go sneak a drink, or I'm really annoyed that I'm here with my normal friends and they're drinking and I'm not. Like, yes, it does refer to that, but it goes a little bit deeper, and I've had a couple of experiences with this. One when I was in fit spiritual condition, and one when I was not in fit spiritual condition. And, the one when I was in fit spiritual condition, this is exactly what happened. I smelled it, looked at it, and was like, there's alcohol in that, and I put it down, and it's like, cool. The first time it happened, I was just shy of 2 years sober, and I was, pushing up against the boundaries of this program. I was like, I did not get sober to go to meetings all the time and only hang out with you AA people. I want a normal life. I want to date. I want to do this. I want to do that. And so that's what I was doing. Hanging out in a bar 5 nights a week, which is probably not the best place for someone who is on perilous ground with her spiritual condition. And it was a Wednesday night. It was after my home group. My old home group was West Kent. We met at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights, and the guy I was dating at the time shot weak darts, and I went to meet him at the bar afterwards to go grab something to eat, and got served a drink. And, I ordered club soda with a splash of cranberry juice, and she heard Calypso with a splash of cranberry juice, and that's what she brought me. And I picked it up and looked at the glass, and I'm like, that looks kind of dark. And stuck the straw in my mouth and inhaled to take a sip, and the fumes and the liquid hit my tongue, and I was like, that's not club soda. And I did kind of have an out-of-body experience. In my mind, I was going about 5 million miles an hour, and outwardly, I just calmly drank down the table and kind of sat back and then picked it up and smelled it, looked at it, and was like, well, I just sort of kind of took a taste of it. Maybe I should take another one to see if that's really alcohol in there or not. That's where I know I'm in trouble. That's where I know that defense against the first drink is on real shaky ground, because I'm second guessing. And, you know, thank God I had been going to a lot of AA meetings, and that I had a sponsor, and that I worked the steps, and that I was in the middle of you guys, and I was still willing to take direction and listen. And that seed had been planted. And I sat there, and this all happened probably in about 30 seconds, but this is what's going on in my mind. I ran through the tape to the end. I'm going to take this drink. I'm going to realize it is alcohol. And then I'm going to say, fuck it. I just broke my sobriety. Why should I stop there? And I'm going to go ahead and get drunk. And then God knows where I'm going to end up. Played it to the end. And I was like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want that to happen. So I just walked up to the bar and waved the waitress down. And I was like, is there alcohol in this? And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I was like, I don't drink. And that poor woman, she was horrified. She felt worse than I did. And then I felt really guilty. I was like, oh my God, it's okay. I didn't drink it. You know, she probably checked on me a dozen times in the half an hour I still stayed there. She felt so bad. And I was just like, it's cool. It's cool. And I'll tell you what, I was not long for that lifestyle. It was probably about three more times I went. And then I was like, you know what? I get it. Thank you, God, for showing up. And thank you for me being clear-minded and willing enough to understand what had just happened. And you know, when it comes to God and these spiritual experiences, I used to be very of the educational variety, like it talks about in the back in the appendix too. It took me a while after this moment to realize that was a burning bush moment for me. That was God working in my life, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. That allowed me to react that way, that pulled me back from that to realize that's not where you are. That's not who you are anymore. And that's not what you want to go back to. So, you know, this paragraph has a lot of special meaning for me because of that experience. You know, I probably read this several times before that happened, and I was like, yeah, okay, I get it. It means something very different for me today. And I'm super grateful for that experience. I know I'm not the only one that's had that experience either. So it's nice to know I'm not the only one that reacts that way when that happens. That tells me I'm in the right place. So with that, I will pass.
Thanks. The 10 step promises. This is some pretty hefty stuff. You know, this is where, like you said, this is where we get return to sanity from step two. And I love that reference that that if tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame, which is a reference back from, remember back where in There Is a Solution, where there's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. You know, it's kind of amazing that, you know, the person we were that started this process and the person we are now, we get to react sanely and normally. I mean, who wouldn't want these things to happen? And, you know, this whole thing of we feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. It does not always feel good. I made the big mistake of thinking that this position of neutrality was always going to be a good, great, happy, butterflies feeling, and sometimes it's not. I mean, this stuff about spiritual growth and pain being a touchstone of it has definitely been my experience. And you know, this position of neutrality is only available to me if I know who I am spiritually, not like materially. And when I get those things mixed up, I pay a heavy price because I can fall asleep as fast as anybody else. And a lot of this stuff, like he says, is this, you know, this is our experience, which you know, they're not theorizing here or giving us opinion. They're telling us what they actually did, and that this is how we're going to react contingent upon our spiritual condition, which means it's conditional. And these are the things that I have to do in order to grow spiritually, in order to stay connected to this power, in order to keep this obsession at bay and God working in my life. That is not always easy to do. It's a lot easier when I get into this process on a daily basis and I'm doing it. When I'm not doing it, everything bothers me. And, you know, during this pandemic, I've turned more into these disciplines than away from them. And I've had to, and it's, like I said, I do not do well. I got an 8-year-old son and I'm homeschooling and, doing all that stuff. And I want to write a blank check to the teachers and just here, write any amount you want in the thing and just take it, you know, please. And I get it. And I have had to turn harder into this because this should be a time where I'm like, wow, do you remember that time back when we were able to spend all this time together? And this is not the time where I want to be making scars and wounds because I'm not practicing these principles. Right. And, I heard something recently at a meeting. If you can't practice these principles in all your affairs, you need to change your affairs. So that's what I had to do. I had to start literally focusing, getting up earlier, having time away, finding ways to fit my life around these principles, not the other way around. I was trying to find to fit these principles around my life. And that doesn't work for me. I need to have clear cut instruction. I mean, I can't believe I've made it this far in life, to be honest with you. I mean, I need directions. I need notes on the freezer, you know, things like that. Cause you know, there's certain things I'm good at and the things that I'm good at, I'm good at. And the things that I'm bad at, I am atrocious at, and I need help. And thank God we have sponsors and people in these rooms and meetings and disciplines for all the stuff we miss. Because I don't do any of this stuff well or perfectly. It does take practice. That's why they call them disciplines. And alcoholics are undisciplined, and I include myself in that. So I'll pass back.
Thank you. Solid stuff right there. All right, third reading. We're on page 85. And it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our will power along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Melissa.
Thanks, Grant. It took me a long time to understand this. We are not cured of alcoholism. I'm like, well, you just told me I don't crave alcohol anymore. I don't want to drink. So that's cured, right? Well, alcoholism isn't just the drink, for me anyway. The ism is all the stuff that's me. I'm the ism. It's the thoughts, it's the actions, it's the fears, it's the stuff that I used to do, or that I used to use alcohol to numb out from, to get rid of. I don't want to feel that feeling, so let me drink instead. I don't want to have to deal with that person, so let me drink instead. So it's just easier for me to deal with them. I don't want to have to, whatever, fill in the blank. That's the ism for me. The drinking was the symptom. That's what I used as the medication to get rid of that. And I don't have that option anymore. So there's something that had to substitute that. And that's the spirituality stuff that you guys are talking about. That's this God thing. When I step away from that, it doesn't look very pretty. It sometimes takes a little bit of while for it to start to creep back in. And sometimes it's quick. And this year is a really good example. I've had kind of a roller coaster of this, this maintenance of my spiritual condition. When we started into quarantine, I was, you know, going to 4 or 5 physical meetings a week. That's my kind of standard norm. I have service position in my home group. I have service position, you know, in the service structure, whatever. That is what I've done from the beginning, and that's what's kept me sober. So enter pandemic and quarantine, and physical meetings go away, and I'm like, well, I'm still doing the service position things. I'm still talking to my sponsor on a regular basis and talking to my, you know, my group of people. So I'm good. I don't need to go to these stupid Zoom meetings, which, by the way, I'm telling my sponsees and newcomers and everyone that I meet that Zoom meetings are incredible. It's awesome that we're all connected this way and we can all, you know, jump into meetings here, there, and everywhere. I didn't go to one for almost a month. I refused, telling everybody else to do it. I'm real good at giving advice and suggestions. I'm real bad at taking my own. And I got into a dark place, and, you know, I didn't want to drink, but I was not pleasant to be around for the very few people that I was around in those early days. And then, you know, as always happens, someone in this program is like, hey, why don't you meet me at Cornerstone on Saturday night? This was about an hour before the meeting. And I was like, well, and I couldn't come up with an excuse fast enough. So I was like, fine. And I went, and lo and behold, it was great. Like it always is. I have no idea what the meeting was about, but it's an AA meeting. It's my medicine. It's what, exactly what I need when I need it, which has been my experience this entire time I've been sober. And so I got right back onto my, you know, 4 or 5 meetings. Actually, I was going to a few more. It was great because I could just pop in on my lunch hour, even if I couldn't stay for one. Meetings were popping up everywhere. It's an incredible transition that we've been able to make as a fellowship, and it's been amazing to watch. And I did pretty well for a while until this fall, and probably about 6 weeks ago, and I got back on that. You know, I'm tired of this, that, and the third. Basically, it's just an excuse for me to be lazy. Some things started happening in my life. I got laid off from my job. School was stressing me out. I'm tired of being cooped back up again because the weather's getting crappy and I can't go outside and have to cancel plans with this family member because of that. And it just, you know, I'm single, I live alone. Poor me. And so I dial back on my meetings again, and I'm going to just my home group and maybe one other one I'll pop into. And it's always an excuse of why I can't go. You know, I'm in school and I'm a human services major, so I'm doing a lot of volunteer work now. Well, my volunteer work took the time of my work hours since I'm not working anymore, but I was using that as an excuse for not going to AA meetings too. Oh, I'm volunteering at the food bank from 1 to 3 p.m. so I can't go to a 7 o'clock meeting tonight. You know, it's just those, let me tell on myself, because this is what I do. And this is, I try to work an honest program. It takes me a while to get there sometimes, but that's where I'm at. So that's what I bring to the table the last few, you know, 6 or so weeks. And about 3 weeks ago, I got really thirsty. And that thought scared the crap out of me, but I still was sitting on it, sitting in the middle of a three-way text conversation with two other fellows in the program talking about what they were dealing with and struggling with. And I'm keeping my mouth shut, sitting there planning on going to get wine at the grocery store on a Thursday night, and it was raining and I didn't want to go out in the rain. That's the only reason I hadn't been yet. And they're talking about this, and I'm silent. And then I finally am like, what is wrong? Stop. Just to, and I blurted it out and got it off my chest. And it was like a 10 million pound weight lifted, you know, and I wrote inventory that weekend on that and realized I'd been sitting in that for about 3 weeks. And I had no idea. I did, but I didn't until I'm past that. And that's what, for me, when it talks about, you know, letting up on my spiritual program of action and resting on my laurels, it's not just one thing that I have to do to stay sober. You know, our triangle is three-sided: unity, service, recovery. And I have to be balanced in all three of those in order to stay sober. And when I start to slack on one side and get wonky, it can get really bad. And I think I'm okay. And there's the problem. I think I'm okay. There's no room for God in any of that. I've not let God in. I've not let anyone else in. to help me with that. And that's when I've started to go back and survive on self-sufficiency. And every time I get self-sufficient, I get into dangerous territory. And, you know, thank God for you guys that you care enough about me to pull me back from this time and again. Because if I'm left to my own devices for long enough, I'll just disappear and nobody will know what happened. But, you know, thankfully today, I have the willingness still to do this. I'm still recovering from that. Last little episode, like, it still chokes me up a little bit because it's so scary that, you know, and a big part of it was my ego. I'm 6 years sober. How can I be sitting here thinking about wanting to take a drink? How can I be sitting here and planning this? I'm doing X, Y, and Z in this program. I'm sponsoring X amount of people. I'm in communication every single day with other alcoholics. Well, I'm not being honest, obviously. I'm not talking about what I need to be talking about. I'm on that surface stuff. Oh yeah, everything's roses and sunshine. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm being of service in my community. I'm being of service in AA. But there's some stuff there that I'm absolutely not being honest about. And it's that lying of omission. I'm not talking about it. Just because I'm not telling a lie doesn't mean I'm not being dishonest. So it's, you know, it's definitely a wake up call for me that it doesn't matter where I'm at in my program, in my sobriety, can happen really quickly. I only have today. Just like it says in here, what I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, and my spiritual condition was in the toilet. It's not fully recovered. It's getting back to where it was, but it's a daily thing. I have to work at it every single day to keep where I need to be to stay sober. So with that, it's your turn.
Thanks. Yeah, boy, is it easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. You know, I just remember when I first started into this program that, my first stint through is I was working a program based on the abstinence of alcohol, and I had no idea, how much of a subtle foe this was. I mean, you know, even the second time around, we're not cured of this. And, I've seen alcohol sprout into, my buddy Jimmy calls it, a drink with legs. I've had the obsession go toward, you know, gambling, the gym, career, money, all these things. And steps 10 through 12 are really our continued growth and our relapse prevention program. And had I known to ask, you know, how much time was were you spending in prayer and meditation each day? How much time did you spend trying to perfect and enlarge your spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others? Were you continuing to watch and inventory your resentments, fears, harms, and selfishness? Like, this is how I keep my fingers on the pulse of my spiritual condition. And, you know, if I'm like, I don't feel like doing it, or things are going okay, you know, I slowly start to backslide. I slowly start to get sicker. And like they said, the progression of this illness never stops. And, you know, what ends up happening, or what happened to me, was I stopped, you know, prayer and meditation or doing any of this stuff. And the illness just, you know, shot right past me. And then I was in an active addiction for 6 years again, and I couldn't get out. And I think the hardest thing, especially after time of being on the wrong side of this, is, you know, myself and I've seen a lot of others not be able to make and do enough of the work to make enough of a spiritual leap to get back ahead of the progression of this illness. And they just stay in the tumble dry cycle of this. And that was me for 6 years. I mean, I took one drink one night, and it took me 6 years to get out of it. And it took a divine intervention on my back porch with a bright light white experience to have me be surrendered from the bottle again. And when I came in here this way, this paragraph hits me hard. We're headed for trouble, daily reprieve, meaning a stay of execution. We must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. And how do you do that? In prayer and meditation. That's how. It's a vision. You know, these are things that I have to do and develop, and other skills to be able to get in touch and stay in touch with this God consciousness. And again, they restate the third step deal. You know, it says, thy will not mine be done. And these thoughts must go with me constantly. And it's the proper use of the will. And, you know, I always lived life self-will, trying to get all the, check all the boxes of the material world, or get the, you know, college graduation, the house, the car, the wife, the money, the, all this other stuff. And when I had gotten to that point or plateau, I was the most miserable because I was spiritually bankrupt. I didn't realize how much, what it was I was seeking out of a bottle, you know, is basically what AA showed me I was lacking in my life, in my spirit. And, you know, once I got through all the old ideas and all the, you know, just the unwillingness to look at this stuff from any perspective other than the experience I'd already had. And man, was I robbing myself of an amazing experience. And it's still hard. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is not easy stuff, but compared to what? You know, compared to what, really? I mean, this is, I got to meditate a little bit. I got to pray. I got to help other people. I mean, oh my God. It's like, you know, I the person I am today as a result of this step, and I continue to be, just, it blows my mind. I didn't know this was possible. And this is a really powerful paragraph here. I mean, a couple musts in there and conditions. I'm getting low on time, so I'll pass it back to you. We got one more paragraph.
Thank you. Great job. All right, well, let's wrap this up. We'll read this last paragraph, and then you guys take a couple minutes on it. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed his directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
Thanks, Grant. I love how, you know, they wrap step 10 up to transition right into 11, where we're going to be dealing with prayer and meditation. You know, action. It's always action, 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 and more action. If I'm not taking action, and if I'm not moving forward, then I'm doing what it talked about in the previous paragraph. I'm resting on my laurels and I'm slipping backwards. Backwards is never a good place for me to go. You know, and it's talking about, you know, this God consciousness. I did not get that for a very long time. Like I talked about, I was a very educational variety when it came to spiritual experiences and the spiritual awakening. My first sponsor had to point them out to me all the time because I was like, I don't get it. You know, she was a great example of, I don't know, I was maybe 6 or 7 months sober, and my mom and I'd made my amends to my mom. We'd had this conversation about, you know, being kind to people when they're being an asshole to you. And she said, you know, usually I react to that. And ever since I've watched you and kind of seen what you've been through, I realized I don't know what's going on in their life. So instead of reacting to them, I just say a little prayer for them and I move on. And I'm like, well, that's cool, mom. And my sponsor's like, yeah, that's a spiritual experience right there. Like, you have shown her a different way. Like, that's rubbed off on her. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, that happens to me all the time. The difference today is I recognize these things more for what they are. And it's not necessarily that I didn't recognize them before. I didn't want to see it that way. I wanted to be the one that had that power and had that control that was making those things happen in my life. When I realized it's been God all along, God's always there. Whether I acknowledge God or not, God is always there. Whether I was using booze to block him, or whatever vice or just plain stubbornness to say, you know, I'm back, I'm in charge, this is all me. It doesn't matter. God doesn't go away. I can't push God away. Once I understood that, I understood what God consciousness meant. It just simply for me just means acknowledging that there's a higher power. I'm not it, that it's working in my life, whether I want it to or not. And, you know, if I decide to see the things for what they are, that the good and the bad things that happen in my life are not of my own doing, then that's a great day. When I try to wrest back that control and, you know, arrange things the way I think they need to be, that's when things start to go a little sideways, a little hairy. You know, so it just, it's every day, it's up and down, it's different. You know, some days I feel it a little bit more than others. And when I do the things that it talks about in step 11 with prayer and meditation is when I'm open more to it and when I feel it more. But when I'm back in control and like, I don't need to pray, I don't need to meditate, I don't need to be nice to people today, that's when that God consciousness starts to dissipate. That's when Melissa's back in control, and that's when things get kind of ugly and not cool. So today, you know, today's been a good day. Today I've been pretty together with this, but we'll see what tomorrow brings, and I will stop so Steve can go.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. We basically have been, you know, this is basically the outline of the Fellowship of the Spirit. It's like we've already, you know, said a lot about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from doing all this work and continuing to do this work, from clearing this channel between ourselves and the sunlight of the Spirit through all the resentment, the jealousy, the fear, the all the things that we do in our fourth column. And what I love about this thing is it talks about receiving strength and direction. It tells us following directions. And I love this part because I need directions. Like I said, I'm, you know, big note on the suggestions I'm not going to take. But directions, okay, you do this, you'll get this. I get that. Okay. And that's what I needed. And it took me 18 years to find that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it was a struggle. You know, and I've experienced so much through all my other senses, but now they're telling us I have to develop a sixth sense. I have to sense the flow of his Spirit into us through this God consciousness, or this sixth sense, which is intuition. And I develop that throughout the day. We have the throughout the day prayer, the inspiration prayer, you know, in 11, step 11 and things like that. And in my on awakening and evening review disciplines, where I'm sitting quietly and observing, hey, how'd you do on that 10th step all day? And I start to have this back and forth with this power. And I start to develop the difference between my thinking mind and my intuitive thought, or what I like to think of is when I say a prayer, I ask God, and what comes back, I listen in my intuitive thought. And that's kind of how my two-way prayer practice works, which completely lit my sobriety on fire, by the way, just big proponent of that stuff. And of course it ends with, but we must go further. And that means more action. And I was like, of course it does. Of course it does. There's no resting here. We have to keep moving or we die. So I'll leave it there so you guys can wrap up and do what you need to do. And thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you, guys. Everybody will get a chance to thank them towards the end of the meeting. Let's do the wrap-up portion. I believe David already posted the Seventh Tradition contribution link for PayPal for the group. You can also go on tidewaterintergroup.org or AA.org if you want to contribute directly to service structure. The Seventh Tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? You either hit that blue hand in the participants tab or wave at the screen. And If not, I have a quick one. There's a new group starting up in January, Mid-Atlantic Group. They're going to meet on Zoom on Thursday nights. I am putting the information in the chat right now. And the first speaker will be Linda W. from Canada, and they will be on at 6:45 on Thursday night. So come out and join them. Any other announcements? All right, I'm gonna take that as a negative. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. You can also email us at info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to have everyone thank the panel. We can do a little quick unmute so everybody can say, hey.
Awesome, thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Steve.
All right, we'll finish up and you guys will have a little more time afterwards to continue thanking them. Thank you guys so much for being here tonight. And I've asked Candida to read the last two paragraphs, or three paragraphs on 164. Let me throw this up for you, Candida.
Woohoo, Candida's here.
We'll also try to unmute you as well. There we go. There you go.
Thank you, guys. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Candida. So glad to be here. So glad to see all you guys. I miss you. This is a vision for you from the big book on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. Oh, may God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Candida. All right, we'll virtually circle up and close with the Lord's Prayer. And afterwards, we'll mute everyone to say thank you. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.